My name is Killian Buckley. I'm from Killarney and I'm sitting here in front of Killarney House.
Yes, Killarney House with beautiful views of the mountains, which I assume you have been on plenty of these.
Yeah, we're actually surrounded by almost all the good mountains. We've got the Reeks out to the right, Purple and Tomies, and then Mangerton. And I think just out of view is Tork there somewhere, yeah.
And Mangerton is where you kind of grew up, isn't it?
Yeah, I grew up at the bottom of Mangerton Mountain. We were known within the family as the Mountain Buckleys, but not because we went up any mountains. We didn't do any of that, just because we were a little bit mad and lived at the bottom of them, I think.
Fair enough. Well, Killian, I suppose your story is kind of interesting in a sense because, you know, as you said, mountain Buckleys, but took you how many years before you went up on the mountain?
Yeah, I never climbed a mountain. I think I might have gone up to the Devil's Punch Bowl once when I was about 13, and I hated it, I think. I mean, I was happy on the way down, but yeah, I didn't really start climbing or going in the mountains till I was in my early 20s.
Tell us a bit about that journey, so, and you know, tell us a bit about your old career and how you actually got onto the mountains in the end.
Yeah, so I moved to London when I was like just turning 19. I had been in college and I dropped out and I did a chefing degree. And I ended up working in a Michelin star restaurant, kind of by accident in a way, which was an amazing opportunity. And I threw myself into it, but about a year and a half in, I was totally burnt out. And I came back to Clarny and I was pretty upset with myself, disappointed, and kind of felt I'd let some people down. And I was pretty depressed at that time for about 4 months. I don't think I really left my room too often. And a friend of mine, Colm Casey, came to my room and he said, "Get out of the bed. I'm going to bring you climbing." I was 20 years old and I said, "What's climbing?" I didn't know what it was. But I was intrigued enough to get out of my bed for the first time in 4 months. So we went to the Gap of Dunloe and we did something called bouldering, which is basically you just have a mat and you climb up on top of a boulder. And I suppose a lot of people here in Clarny, certainly me when I was growing up, don't know that like the Gap of Dunloe is one of the best rock climbing destinations in Ireland. And the Reeks, of course, are you know, obviously the highest mountain, Carntool, but there's a whole range of mountains there. So I just started going every day. I kind of used it as some kind of medicine in a way, I suppose. And I found over time I was getting better at it. I wasn't really natural at it. I was just a bit persistent. So that's how I got into it, yeah.
And tell me when you came off that day with your friends, how did you feel?
Yeah, I have very strong memories of that. I remember just feeling awful, you know, beforehand, and like, you know, I kind of had no sense of self-worth, I suppose, before going. And it seems stupid, but just being able to pull myself up onto the top of a boulder kind of gave me some sense of like, oh, you can actually do something, you know? And I do really strongly remember thinking like some kind of deep connection to nature, maybe something I'd been looking for already, but also like, I feel good for the first time in a long time. By the next morning, I was feeling terrible again. I mean, it was a pretty long journey back to like full confidence and kind of learning all about myself. But there was definitely something on that day that was like, right, there's a path here to get better, I suppose, or to.
Did you feel peer pressure at the age of 20, and you know, feeling that you failed must have been very hard.
Definitely, yeah, like. I suppose in some ways I probably had some kind of anxiety thing going on when I was young anyway that I didn't know what to call it at the time, you know? But I remember just thinking like, if I could prove myself, you know, like the chefing, I got this opportunity for a job. If I could prove myself, then I'd be like, great, you know, like people would be like, oh, fair play, give me a pat on the back. So when that didn't happen, or, you know, when it all fell apart in a way, I remember just feeling like, oh, you know, I'm terrible. And that was a journey, you know, that I think a lot of people go on in the early stage of their life in a way. But I would do it exactly the same again, you know. It set me on a path towards learning to love myself, I suppose. But also kind of having to look inside psychology and my mind. That definitely stood to me years later, when I'd be climbing some of the biggest mountains in the world, you know, when you're feeling wrecked and you want to stop, but you know that you've got some kind of like persistence to keep going, you know, that's something I learned at that time.
So, as you said, you kind of went and you kept tearing up and, you know, figuring it out, and you started to enjoy it then at that point. So tell us then when you started kind of reaching high peaks.
Yeah, I remember the first big thing that I did, what I thought was massive, was a friend of mine called Jasmine actually messaged me. It had snowed in the Reeks, and she asked me, did I want to go and climb the Bean Carrick Ridge, which goes from Bean Carrick onto Carntool and then over to Cahir. And it's kind of like a proper ridge, you know, you kind of in and out between rocks, but in the snow. And I remember thinking, in the snow, like, jeez, I don't know about that. And that was definitely a moment where I was like, whoa, you know, us generally, but me also, like, humans, we're very capable, actually, of moving in this kind of terrain. And then soon after, I think it was in a nightclub at about 2 a.m. in Galway, myself and my best friend, Tomás O'Donoghue, were like, we should do something big. And then one of us, who knows who, said, we should climb Mont Blanc. And we were like, right, we're going to do that. So we booked, and myself and 3 friends from here went over to climb Mont Blanc. And I thought that if you climb Mont Blanc, like, that was it, like, you could retire then. That was climbing completed. And so we got to the top, and it was amazing. And we had managed to do it ourselves without a guide. You know, that was kind of a thing in a way. But first of all, it was easier than I suppose we thought it might be. It was really challenging, but it was like, whoa, this is possible, I suppose. And then I remember getting to the top thinking I was going to retire by the time I got to the top, and looking around, there was like 4,000 other mountains out there in the Alps. The Matterhorn, the Eiger, all these huge mountains looking at back at me. I was like, oh, well, I don't think I'm going to retire. So I decided there that I was going to probably move over to the Alps. Yeah.
At what age?
I was 23 or 4.
Oh. So very early on into your kind of mountaineering journey.
Yeah.
It's a big move, like.
We had a little core group here. It was kind of an amazing thing. I suppose it's kind of like a hippie revolution of sorts. We all kind of gathered here at the same time. It was around, you know, it was not too long after the crash in 2008, so there wasn't always work, and people had a bit of time, and I ended up guiding here through Nisha, whose dad, Con Moriarty, had a guiding company. There was a group of us. And I also spent a year in Capitan Lee also, where I learned a lot in terms of, like, the skills you need. But, yeah, we kind of pushed each other, I suppose. It became a bit of a kind of a movement, yeah.
Mm. Isn't it amazing the fact that if you hadn't come back from London that none of this would have happened?
Oh, easily, easily. And I was not a sporty person, like... You know, growing up, I was so far onto the bench that I was almost up the mountains regularly. So maybe that's where I learned it. But I never thought of myself as sporty. You know, I always thought, like, oh, you're just a weak person. You wouldn't be able to put on muscle, or you, like, you know. So the fact that we managed to get together, and then I learned that actually I wasn't what I thought I was in a way. Yeah, that was pretty changing.
So... In that experience, and when you did climb Mont Blanc with your friends, what did you learn about Killian?
It was probably the first thing I learned, actually, in true mountaineering and Mont Blanc, is, like, good friends are the best thing, you know? Like, I did have kind of problems even growing up of, like, not really trusting the people who like me, or... I was a bit of a big character, and I'd kind of be trying to make myself small. And you suppose when you trust people in the mountains, you kind of know that they're there for you, you know, and you know that you're there for them. So that was a big thing. And then I suppose internally at that time, I was still struggling from time to time with my own sense of self. And that was a journey that would continue long after that. But I definitely knew something that I think is true for everybody, that, like, we all have this kind of possibility, I suppose, to succeed in whatever that is, whether it's climbing a mountain, or whether it's doing your Leaving Cert, or whether it's building a business. The next time I went climbing in the Alps was Nisha invited me over to do some, and he said, do you want to go climb And it was something much more technical. It was called the Frenet pillar, or not the Frenet pillar. The name is gone. It'll come in my head now. The Frenlo spur. And that was more technical, but we ended up. It ended up not going very well. I forgot to buy the ice axe leashes. I had a long list of equipment I had to buy, and of course we got like 700 meters up. I dropped an ice axe. Then we got on the phone with the rescue service, which in Chamonix is free, and said, "Oh, we've dropped the ice axe." And the French guy came on the phone and said, "Oh, it's no problem. Your friend, he has another ice axe. You will go up." Looking up at this like 200 meters of ice, and he said, "How many ice screws have you got?" And we said, "Oh, we've two." And he said, "Two ice screws." "Who do you think you are, Uli Steck?" And at the time, Uli Steck was like, they call him the Swiss machine. He was like the greatest climber of all time. So we ended up getting rescued, and it was a complete failure. Probably one of the funniest things that happened at that time, we flew down, we were so embarrassed. Like, we thought on the way up we were going to get invited to the Oris for tea because we were going to have succeeded massively. And it turned out we ended up back at the pub hanging our heads in shame, but we were chatting to this Irish fella who lived there, and his English friend came to the table and he said, "Did you hear what happened?" And we were like, "Oh jeez, here we go." No, two English climbers got rescued off the Frenlo. We were like, "Oh jeez, those idiots." But what I suppose in answer to your question, what did I learn? Like, I learned at that moment, we went back, both myself and Isha and the rest of us as well, like, we probably should have given up at that point, you know, like, we were absolutely unprepared. We were didn't have a clue what we were supposed to do, personally anyway. Nisha had a bit better clue than me. But we just kept going. And I was saying that I did some talks in the schools there during the week for the Wander Wild. It was one of the things I was trying to get across to them. It's like, just go out and fail, you know? Like, I learned more that day that we got rescued than I did for many of the successes I had after, in terms of, like, how to be prepared, and like, if you can just learn to fail both internally, like, allow yourself to sometimes not be great at things, or, you know, sometimes to, you know, I don't know, we might say something stupid, I mean, you know, whatever it is, but don't beat yourself up for failing in whatever way that means to you.
I actually think it's very powerful to fail and learn from it as well.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
It's a better story as well.
Oh, way better stories, yeah. Yeah, like, we're kind of afraid of failing, like, but there, I said to the guys in the school, like, you know, so often, I think that's true for anyone who's failed, like, failing at something, and that's true for me with the chefing, I suppose, was, like, definitely a stepping stone on the path to some other success, you know? Mm. And sometimes with climbing, you might end up trying the same thing 7 or 8 times. Sometimes you never get to the top, you know? Mm. But it'll never have been wasted, you know? Mm-hmm.
So tell us a bit about those talks, because the Wander Wild Festival was very recently, and I suppose you're talking to TYs and kind of inspiring them as such.
Yeah. You know, growing up here, like, and I suppose how I got into mountaineering, you know, like, we have such facilities here on our doorstep, you know? And we all admire them from a distance, but you can count on one hand how many people actually use those facilities, you know, in terms of percentages. And certainly when I'd been doing some talks for the Wander Wild in the last couple of years, and I'd ask people, you know, who'd been up Cairn Tool, and you might get one or two hands maybe who had parents who were big into it, but the vast majority of young people hadn't. So I went and did these talks this year, and then also brought a group up to the top of Cairn Tool, which I'll tell you about in a bit. But I suppose the idea of the talk was to use my journey into the mountains, what I managed to just achieve. You know, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination in, you know, an absolutely excellent climber. You know, there'd be a whole leagues above me. But I have managed to achieve a lot of things with not very much talent in that world, and try and share that, those ideas. So the name of the talk was "The Mountain Is You," and something that I definitely have learned throughout my journey is that so often when we think of something that is impossible to achieve but that we want to achieve, the main thing in the way of us making that is yourself, the mountain of you, I suppose. Yeah. If you can learn to kind of climb over yourself, then more often than not, you'll get to the exactly where you want to go, but you'll definitely go on a journey towards something big and achieve something much bigger than you would have otherwise, I think.
Is that a question that you ask the students as well?
Yeah, so it was kind of amazing. I asked them just to get them off started. I asked them to take out a piece of paper and I asked them to write down one thing anonymously that they wanted to achieve but they thought was impossible. And then we collected them up at the end of the talk. And I let them, some of them didn't want to write it straight away, but maybe in the middle of the talk they kind of felt like they could. And some of the answers were amazing, you know, like, well, you had one guy who said he wanted to climb Everest, which I know, I haven't climbed Everest myself, but I've certainly climbed things that are kind of in that league, in a slightly different niche of climbing. Mm. But there's absolutely no doubt about it that Everest is possible, you know. Mm. And then others were saying, you know, they wanted to get into college. They wanted to get really good points in their leaving cert. Then there was a few as well, which were very touching, that they wanted to pay off their parents' mortgage. They wanted to buy their parent a house. And, you know, I suppose that's the thing about impossible is, like, it's very personal, you know? Like, like, what's impossible to you? And the only reason that it's completely impossible is if you believe that, you know? And so it was very cheesy, but at the end of the talk, I got them to write down the word impossible on a page with a bit of space between each letter. Then I got them to draw a line after the first two letters and read out what they had. And what they had was, I am possible, I am possible. So I think there's a fella in Killorgan Community College who's starting a T-shirt business called that now, he said. He told me after he'd gotten down from the top of Carn Tuil, where he was 2 days later. Yeah.
So tell us a bit about the Carn Tuil experience and bringing teenagers up there.
So like I said, you know, most people haven't been up there in Clarny, which is insane. If we were in Clanberris at the bottom of Snowdon, I think most people would have. And, you know, a lot of that is to do, I think, also with sometimes we could have better trails, you know, we could have a little bit better signage, make things more accessible, not less wild, but more accessible, you know. Mm. And I think there's a funding issue there. And if any elected representatives want to get in touch with me, I'd be happy to advise them on how to maybe push some funding towards bringing the best facilities of its kind in the country into a more usable state. Mm. I just had an idea after last couple of years ago when I was talking that we need to change this. Like, we can't have class loads of kids who have the biggest mountain in the country not know that they can do it, you know? Mm. And so luckily I have a group of friends of mine who are all part of this kind of hippie revolution, as I call it, where we started climbing, who are now super experienced and got a team together of great guides, a lot of them international mountain guides. Talked to the schools, the SEM and Clarglen Community College were up for it. Despite the risks, and of course we made it, you know, risk assessments and all this stuff to make it as safe as possible, but I pushed them to say, let's do the big one, you know, let's see what we can achieve. And you know, we had it broken down into the possibility that we might just go to the end of the valley and turn it back, and we might just go to the top of the ladder and turn back, or we might just go to the top
And turn back.
yeah. Or stay there. Who knows? I'm very proud to say that we managed to get 24 young people, boys and girls, all the way to the top. Every single person made it top in difficult conditions. We had a kind of a mixed day where we had dry weather at some times. There was a literal waterfall coming down the Devil's Ladder that we were going up. then it was, but it was dry as we went up, so that was made it possible. And then we got up to the top slopes of Carntool, and it was like gale force winds with rain coming at you sideways. And at that point, I turned around to the kids and I said, look, guys, you know, this is challenging stuff. And I knew we were safe. That part of the mountain is not somewhere you can get blown off, you know. Look, guys, like, we can turn back here if you want. You know, this is tough. And they all said, no way, we're going to the top. By the time between the first student and the last student getting to the top, arrived, about 10 or 15 minutes passed, just people moving at different speeds, and it was totally in cloud at the summit, which I was a little bit disappointed about. I was like, it would have been good now if they could see how magnificent it is up here. And as the last person arrived at the summit, somehow the clouds completely lifted and we could see all the way back down towards Dingle and all the way down into Clarny Valley, down into Glencar, lakes and these big ridges with sun shining on them. And the kids were just like, Genie Mac, I've done this, you know.
And did you get that from them? What were they saying afterwards?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think on the way up the hill in the rain, there was a slight question as to whether what they had decided to do was what they really wanted to do. But by the time we were all on the way down, they were delighted, you know. And I think, you know, in terms of mental health or anxiety, or it can be hard when you're a teenager to just chat, you know, and find time to chat and maybe chat to people that you're not necessarily best friends with. But I've always found on the way back down a mountain after a success like that, you know, whether you're 15 or 75, you suddenly have this kind of ability to just let yourself be, you know. And
for those teenagers as well, they've all created a new bond between each other. You know,
totally, yeah, totally. And you know, what I tried to inspire them to, you know, as we were going up, you know, about decisions we made, you know, that, you know, reduce the risk and kind of, you know, because those are the decisions you make in life, but they're also the decisions you make in mountaineering. Mm. About like, how do you succeed but make yourself as secure as possible. Mm. They bought into that, and I would like to see, and I think it will take a lot more work. And, you know, we were speaking with some of the principals about maybe developing some kind of program for next year where maybe we come four or five times with a group of us and teach them different skills that would make them more prepared. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see those guys and be able to tell their friends that they can do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And get these mountains, you know, that we're so lucky to have, become a playground for ourselves, really, from Killarney people, or for Kerry people, I mean, Clorglen, wherever you're from, and Irish people generally, yeah.
The mountains that we are looking at, which is your favourite one to climb?
I did a hike for the Wonder Wild, which is called Hidden Valley Hike. I live in Bottom Mangerton, and Mangerton, the normal way, is great. But there is a valley in there which is quite hard to access. It's got no real path, actually. So you do kind of need to know what you're doing to go in there. But it's called the Horse's Glen. And I mean, look, for me, it's I've been climbing in America, I've been in Nepal, I've been all over the Alps. And I would say there is very few places that are as spectacular as the Horse's Glen. And if there was to be some project for pathways into the mountains here, that would be a serious candidate, you know. Mm. Because right now it's pretty gnarly, but it so easily could be this magnificent place where you go, and it brings you back up on top of Mangerton then. So I suppose it's kind of like coming home.
Yeah, exactly. And then you come down home and have the tea and
stuff. That's it, yeah. Tim Buckley will be down there with the brown bread ready to go.
Killian, I suppose if you could go back to 20-year-old Killian now, what advice would you give him?
Just be yourself, really. You know, learn to be yourself. Learn to love yourself, I suppose, you know. There's an awful lot of pressure, I think, to be fit into whatever box you think there might be out there, but you can be sure that everyone else is looking for other boxes. So, you know, if you're feeling anxious or you're feeling whatever, as I was at that time in my life, just look, keep looking for yourself, you know, and I think you'll find them eventually.
Very good. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you, and hopefully you could start a little group here where adults of all ages can follow you up.
Yeah, well, at the moment, the other thing I'm involved in at the moment is this thing called the World Climate Relay, which is a group of six of us around the table in the Alps have created a global movement for climate change, where normal people like ourselves are choose a challenge of their own making. As long as it's human powered, it counts. So it could be 2 kilometer hike, it could be 100 mile swim, or it could be anything in between. To raise money for the world's most efficient climate charities. And that's between the 5th and 12th of June. So if you're looking to start, give yourself a challenge to get you moving for the summer, and be able to change the planet, the charities that we support, €100 donated to one of those charities is equivalent to taking 41 cars off the road for a year. So if you want to have a really impactful, meaningful collaboration with the rest of the globe, we've got people in 35 countries now in the globe taking up challenges. So that might be a way for us all to do our part. Yeah.
If people want to find out more about that, where can they go?
They can go to www.worldclimaterelay.org or follow us on Instagram at World Climate Relay, and you'll find information there, or sign up or donate. If you're not able to sign up, you can also just donate.
Listen, Killian, thank you so much for your time, and, you know, best of luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.